Welcome to Get in the Herd, a podcast about addiction and recovery brought to you by the McShin Foundation. If you or a loved one are looking for real discussions about addiction, recovery, stigma, advocacy, and most importantly, hope, then stick around. Thanks for joining us. Now sit back and get ready for another great episode of Get in the Herd.
refrigeration. I was going back to my grandma's house and working, helping out my granddad for a night or a day, just doing anything I could. And I couldn't figure out why, every day I was trying to be in McShane and cover a group for somebody, whether it was Nathan, whether it was, I don't know, whoever needed a group covered. I was constantly trying to figure it out. And now that I'm like looking back on it, it was because I'm supposed to be in this field. Like, I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing now. It means so much to me that I'm able to work with the intensive guys and that I'm able to do groups and stuff like that, and that I get to be in position for the miracle, like watching other guys get what I've got. Like, that to me is like, holy crap, dude. Like,
So you want to hear something terrible?
what's up?
We just got sound.
Oh no, we've been
Yeah.
soundless for 10
We've been
minutes.
soundless for 10 minutes. So I apologize to anybody that's out there listening. We have been soundless for 10 minutes, and that is completely my fault. A button got pushed that should not have gotten pushed.
Ah,
But I've since fixed it.
that's fine. You know,
Is it though?
I'm
Is
done.
it?
I'm out.
Art quits. Art quits.
Oh, freaking amateurs, man. So,
I know, I know.
we were just talking about purpose.
Yes, we were talking about purpose. And
Yeah, how important purpose is to people in early recovery and people in recovery in general, because finding your purpose, like we y'all didn't get to hear it, but like we were saying, is detrimental to making or breaking it. Justin does this amazing thing that is this podcast that gets to go out to the jails and gets to go out to other institutions. And we were talking about a guy who is a direct pro like he is a direct product of this podcast and breaking the bondage that gets shipped out to the jails and stuff like that. To be able to see stuff like that in action is the hope shot that everybody is looking for, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And Aaron's doing great right now. He just finished the
Aaron's
28
doing awesome. I
day
actually just got
test.
to talk to him last night a
Yeah.
little bit. He'll randomly message me, and it's crazy because like we get so many people that come through here, right? And like, a lot of them get out of their 28-day program and then they go on to sober living. And once they get into sober living, you really don't hear from them or see them that often, because that's the whole idea behind sober living, is to get you back out into society and get a job, start making money, start paying, your rent, and start, paying your bill back together.
Being responsible.
You exactly. And getting while having some accountability, but you get a chance to get out in the real world, without without a lot of the real world threats, if you can grasp
Yeah,
what I'm
you're
saying.
in the bubble, but you're not
You're in
in
the
the
bubble,
bubble.
but you're not in the bubble.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can choose to come up here to the church as often as you want to, or you can only come up here when, Wednesday nights and Sunday for the once a month meetings. You can, it's really up to you. Art, you're in sober living now, right?
Yeah, I'm in sober living, and being able to come to the church has been really important for me.
Yeah.
When I'm not working or, I'm not really doing anything, I'm usually over here at the church.
Yeah, I and that's honestly one of the things that makes me glad that I actually work here, is because the first time I came through here, and you'll hear me, if you listen to this show a lot, you'll hear me compare the first time versus this past time, because they're two completely different sides of the coin. The first time I came through, I didn't really know what I was getting into. I didn't know what recovery was. I had no idea what I was doing. I came here because I didn't have any other place to go. I had already detoxed. I had already gone to Tucker's. So I was done with my detox and everything, and all I was doing was just basically finding a place to live, because I couldn't live with my parents anymore. And I came in and it was like, oh, look, recovery. Like, okay, I guess I'll do this now. And I didn't really take it seriously. I kind of dove in head first, and I was like, I'm Mr. Recovery now. And 6 months later, I was immediately relapsing, But this past time, I knew what I was doing and I had a plan, and I did, you know, I took the same path. I went to Tucker's and then came straight here into sober living, but it was a completely different ballgame because I got lucky as to, let me try to use my words properly. I got lucky by knowing the mistakes that I made the first time through. The first time I came here, did not stay with the herd. I came over to the church as little as possible. I didn't, you know, I attended meetings, but I wasn't really attending. I was just there, you know. I didn't know about other recovery pathways. You know, I thought there was one and one only. And I got turned off because of a very specific aspect of that one recovery pathway that I didn't quite like, that I couldn't necessarily wrap my head around. But this, you know, this time I you know, I've stayed with the herd. I've got a whole renewed sense of, you know, why I'm doing what I do. And like I was saying, you know, working here, that keeps me kind of in the bubble, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I have a whole other life outside of here. I'll be the first one to admit, I don't go to a lot of meetings. I very rarely go to meetings. And it's not because I don't like meetings, because I always do get stuff out of meetings. But one of the things that is said is that when you get a group of addicts together, you basically have a meeting, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm around recovery all day. You know, when I wake up, I come here and it's wham, I'm in the middle of recovery and people trying to recover and that whole thing, you know, that's my whole job, you know? And then when I go home, I just want to be at home. I want to be with my family, you know, like I want to relax, you know, I want to live that home life, you know, and what I don't want to do is burn myself out, because that's something that can very easily be done.
Yeah, you burn yourself out in recovery. I mean, that's your life.
Yeah. If your life 100% is recovery and all you do is go to meetings and, you know, do your step work and, you know, do your read your literature, like you will get burned out on that stuff, you know? And that's not to say that it's bad, you know, I mean, to some people, they love that lifestyle, you know? But for me personally, if that's all I do, it will burn me out. It will burn me out.
And like not the importance, but how crazy and how easy it is to get burned out.
Yeah.
Something that is so like, I don't think people realize how easy it is to get burned out.
Yeah.
Like it takes no time.
Well, you're burned out before you realize you're burned out.
Exactly.
You start losing interest and you're just like, why am I doing this, man? Like,
yeah, you got to find a balance.
Yeah, you do. You very much have to find a balance. And don't get me wrong. Like, I love being in recovery, man. Like I love this shit with all my heart. And, you know, I of course I still have the desire to use is always still there. You know, that's never going to go away, but when I think about the consequences of what, man, it's so much better on this side of the fence, you know, like
being exponentially
clean, yeah, being clean and sober is just, it's so much easier, you know.
Yeah,
like it's so much I got so tired of just the daily grind of having to feed an addiction, and it's so stupid, man. Like it's so stupid having to spend so much time, effort, energy, money, just feeding something and trying to gather up as much of something that you know you're just going to have to go back out and grab more of. Like it's so, if you think it's so stupid, you know, but that's the insanity of being in active addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, like you know, you're sick and tired of it. You know, physically exhausted, mentally exhausted. You feel like shit all the time, you know, but you still do it. You still do it. And it's like, why? What are we doing? Like, what are we doing to ourselves? You know? And right now, like, I don't have to worry about that. I just don't have to worry about that. You know, like I took my dog for, you know, I live in a small apartment with my girlfriend and her daughter. And we have this little side yard. And when you look up it, I mean, there's trees and everything, but there's this, you know, view right between the trees where the moon kind of like gets really big and bright at the same time every night.
Yeah.
And I was walking her last night and I looked up at the moon because I always do. And I just thought to myself, I was like, holy shit. Like, this is so freeing. Just being able to like exist in this moment without having to worry about shit. Do I have enough for later on tonight? Do I have enough for tomorrow morning? Do I have like,
that's huge. Yeah.
It was so freeing. And I was just like, damn, I can just like, I can just worry about my dog pooping in the right place. You know, like I can just worry about going back inside and giving her a treat. You know, like I don't have to,
I don't have to worry about my phone dying on the walk.
Yeah.
How am I going to get in contact with my plug if my phone dies?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. Like that was, I mean, like I have little, I guess you could say profound moments like that all the time, you know?
Yeah, I get them too here and there, you know, especially like just doing normal stuff, like driving around with my roommates and just talking about stuff and joking around. And I'm just like, kind of blows my mind. Like at that moment, I don't need anything else, but just some company and like just good conversation and just like, you know, just joking around really.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. Cause you know, I couldn't do that before. And I mean, I didn't even have anybody to joke with around. And I was talking to my uncle yesterday about how stopping or how, you know, how getting rid of the drug using and stuff and like, you know, the constantly chasing it and how much headspace that takes up. And now that it's a little more empty up there, I can fill it with positive things and like relationships and talking to people and like my son and my sister, my brother, my dad, my son's mom, you know, who I hadn't talked to in like 2 years, started talking to her again. And, you know, I thought a lot of these relationships were burned permanently and, people are starting to come around, which is awesome. It's really important to me. And I'm really glad that like, I'm doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's shocking though, really how before coming to McShane or before, cause I had done this a few times. This is my ninth time in treatment. And this time is a lot different because I actually am like committed and willing. And it's crazy how things do change. Like I didn't really believe what other people were saying, like old timers, you know, like how good the recovery high is. And
yeah, yeah.
And it's for real. It's not, you know, it's not all better yet, but it's gotten drastically
and it's gonna take a while to get all better and
yeah,
you know, I mean, like I said before, man, there's still plenty of times where, you know, I get bored and I'm just like, or like I drink too much coffee sometimes and like I'm over caffeinated and I'm like, shit, like, you know, like a downer would be real nice right now, that, you know, like something like that, you know, but it's like, it's if I give myself permission to do one thing, then I'm off to the races. Exactly. And I don't want to be off to the races anymore, man. My race is over. Like I'm done racing, you know?
Yeah. I was leading a group recently and I was telling them like, I don't have that in me anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the last time I used, I died 2 times in the same day.
Yeah.
Next time I use, I'm dead for real this time. Like I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not about it. Like there's something inside of me that is telling me if you do this, you will for sure die.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that saying that some must die so that some will live. And I think that plenty of people have paid the price so that I could live.
Dude, plenty of people are still paying the price.
Exactly. And
Go ahead. I was going to say, man, Art, I got a question for you too, but I just have to say this, man. Like, drugs ain't drugs anymore, man.
Not at all.
Death. It's a damn death sentence right now.
Yes.
With everything, freaking pot being laced with fentanyl. What?
That's crazy.
Seriously? Pot? Yeah. Like as far as drugs go, that seems like one of the least harmful drugs that's out there. You know, I mean, people use it to get off of other drugs, you know, like people use it as almost like an MAT type situation, you know, and they're lacing it with fentanyl. Are you serious? Like, if it's come to that, then like, ain't nothing safe anymore. Nothing safe. Like, and there's some type of like longer, there's some crazy
fentanyl.
Huh? Yeah. It's like, I think it's like 50 to 100 times stronger than fentanyl. Yeah,
that stuff that they use fentanyl on elephants.
Yeah.
It's a
elephant tranquilizer.
Yeah.
I thought it was something else.
It could be something else. I mean, there's
but I know they're cutting fentanyl with car fentanyl.
Something that came from, I'm pretty sure, like, I just read about it like a few months ago, and like it may have been already out, but it's like hitting the streets now. And like, yeah, it's like, dude, you can't just go out and get dope and expect it to be dope. Like,
no, not anymore.
You know, like you can't just go out and get cocaine and expect it to be cocaine. You know, like it's not the 70s and 80s anymore. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's crazy. But anyways, Art, you had mentioned that, you know, this time was different because you were dedicated and you were, like, what do you think is doing that for you? What do you think is giving you that stronger sense of desire? If I'm going to put you on the spot.
No, I think I don't talk about this a lot because I don't want people to think that they have to have this experience in order to get sober. But for me, I honestly feel like I had like a spiritual experience, not a spiritual awakening, but an experience when I was at Tucker's. And that like really changed me because I noticed that the thing with me is really trying to, because I know I'm going to think about drugs and alcohol for the rest of my life, you know, but now the thought comes and goes. It's the obsession that's gone. And
And by obsession, you mean obsession for drugs?
I mean the repetitive thoughts, just thinking constantly, and like, you know, like doing it and the, you know, imagining about it. And you know, just now, like the thought comes and it goes. If I have a craving, I kind of tell myself, you know, this is only going to physically last for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And after that, it's all in my head. And I haven't even gotten to that point yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's what's been huge is I can feel that the obsession is gone because now I can say that because before it wasn't. And now like I feel it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's really
freeing for sure.
I got a question for you.
That's awesome though. That's awesome. But would you say that you could feel it coming in the air tonight? Oh Lord. I'm sorry.
Phil.
Sorry, he said it and all I could think is
but yeah, no, just really quick on what you were asking me, like that, so that's really what has got me to continue doing this. It's just like after I got a little taste of the obsession being gone and my that headspace getting freed up, and now I could fill it with stuff like hanging out with people and actually paying attention to people and participating in relationships has been that's what people, you know, that's what John talks about, is that recovery high, that recovery high that's so much better than that drug high. And it's for real. So I just like, I got a little taste of it, you know, so now I just want to keep chasing that, really.
And I like John has this story called The Story of Babafax, and at the end of the story it talks about he tells the guy that's looking for the best drug ever, the ultimate drug, that the best drug ever is being clean and sober and being able to participate in relationships and have a loving life and a life full of just awesomeness. And the dude
said, hang on a second, guys. I'm going to go try to quiet these folks down real quick.
Go ahead. And And the addict in the story goes, "Oh no, that's not true." And he tells him this random destination. And then he goes, looks over at another yogi and goes, "Isn't it crazy that people would rather die knowing a lie than stay alive learning a truth?"
Yeah, that's I heard John.
Like that.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how many times I would have rather have heard a lie in my active addiction, or how many times I did hear a lie in my active addiction. Like, nah, this ain't got fentanyl in it.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Because I just died.
Yeah.
Like that. That's what we're at now, guys. Like, we're at a point where, like, we're dropping like flies. And I don't want to drop like a fly anymore. Like, I don't want to worry about what's going to be. I remember when I first got here, somebody did, I think it was Carlos, but he did a group where he made us write our obituary.
That's a good group.
Like our own obituary. We had to write our own obituary. And like at the time, I can remember writing on my obituary, Darian Diggs, loved by his family, but hated by his family. No good junkie. Never amounted to anything. You know, like all this terrible shit. And if I had to go back and rewrite my obituary now, like it would not be the same at all. And it's because I got a taste of that recovery high by sticking around the people with black key tags, by, you know, constantly getting shit off of my chest when I needed to. If I wouldn't have been able to do that, like I would not have made it to where I am. And I'm glad I got guys like you in my network, because I feel comfortable with just, you know, like talking to you about shit.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I remember your first day here, Art.
Yeah.
Like
I don't.
Like, I remember Art's first day here. Art came in and like we played, he doesn't even remember this, but we played video games for like an hour before they took him to Tucker's. We, like me, him, and Ryan Clatterbuck, we all played video games on my Xbox in our room. And Art has no recollection of that. Like,
Were you high when you got here?
Yeah, yeah. I had flown in from LA and got here like at 9 at night. And I was lit. And I was on the thing, I don't remember because I was on pretty heavy dose of benzos.
Mm.
So that'll wipe your memory. But yeah. I don't even remember like McShin, what it looked like or anything like that. And in my, at Tucker's, when I was there for those 18 days, I kept having this image of McShin it being a little tiny church on a huge steep hill. No, that's not, doesn't look like that.
You were at Tucker's for 18 days?
I was there for 18 days. Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking that guy's not ever coming back.
Yeah.
Good
and God. Then he showed up, literally I said that and he showed up the next day.
Yeah.
And I was like, isn't that funny how God works? Like,
walked down, saw it.
Yeah,
yes, I did.
Like, I remember I was talking to Ryan and I was like, dang, it's been a long time since I've seen Art. And he was like, yeah, he's probably not coming back, dude. I was like, yeah, I mean, if he's not back now, he's not coming back. And then the next morning, like, somebody said something about, oh, we're going to get Art. And I was like, man, no, they're not. And then literally that afternoon, there's Art. And I was like, he was in my room. Like, I was like, yo, dude, are you okay? And he was like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I'll tell you what, dude. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I thought it was at Scott House the first night. And apparently, I was at Clark the first night. And yeah.
Yeah, I ran up to him and gave him a hug. And he was like,
I didn't know who Darian was.
He was looking at me all weird. And I was like, dude, you were in my room your first night here. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, dude, this. And I like broke down everything that had happened. And he was like, I remember none of this.
Yeah.
And I was like, I bet.
Yeah. The first 9-10 days at Tucker's, like I was hallucinating the whole time. I was going through DTs from the benzo withdrawal. And then on top of that, like a week into that, I caught COVID in there.
Oh.
They tested me 3 times, kept testing positive. So on top of the, you know, detoxing at Tucker's, I was on, I was on COVID restriction by myself in a room for the 18 days, the whole entirety of it. Maybe not the first night, but yeah.
Oh,
it was rough.
Miserable.
Yeah, I know. And then being super paranoid and like going in the bathroom and they have like, it's kind of like jail. They have like a little metal hole where they stick the toilet paper in. It just sits there.
Yeah.
I would put my ear in there and I could hear the nurses and the doctors conspiring and just, yeah. it was a lot. I was looking for remote controls that, you know, the nurses could freeze me with, and I tried to jump over the nurses station to get the remotes, and it was a lot. God came down to talk to me, and then I would get out of bed and step to the left, and then he told me I could drop into heaven. It was a really crazy experience. I don't want to do that again.
You know what?
They're so loud.
I know. I'm ready to throw something at them. Yeah. Art knows this. My favorite thing to say, like when I'm not upset, but when I'm agitated, is I'm going to throw something at you. Like our roommate, Nick, me and him, like we don't get into arguments. We get into like couples quarrels.
Nick who?
Nick Aarons. Yeah, we get into like a little bicker, like an old married couple. And I'll be like, Nick, I'm going to throw something at you. Like my eyes will get all wide and we just all start laughing, like dying laughing. But it's cool that I get to do that today.
It
like,
is cool.
Normally when I tell somebody I'm going to throw something at you, I throw something at them.
Yeah.
You know, and that was partially because I was high. Like, and I was angry. I was angry because I was high, and I was high and angry, and I didn't know why I was angry while I was high. Like, that, to not know my emotions is, to me, like, I hate that. Like, to not know why I'm feeling some kind of way and what caused that, it makes me so upset. And, like, being in recovery now, I'm able to understand emotion and like understand how I feel and stuff like that. And I can sit down and I can journal about it and be like, oh, wow. You know?
You know, there's one thing that I know I can think about. If I ever find myself in a situation where I'm like, I feel like using right now. There's one thing that I can think about that I know will pull me off of the edge, and that's the knowledge that I don't ever want to have to go through detox ever. That is miserable. Effing miserable. Like meth detox, that's like, that's not really that bad physically.
You sleep and eat.
Yeah, you sleep and eat, but mentally,
it's rough. It's depressing. Yeah,
like I've never been in a darker place mentally than I was when I was getting off of meth. But this last time, I was on opiates, and dude, like,
did you poop your pants?
No, I didn't poop my pants. I didn't poop my pants.
Lucky. I have. Lucky.
Yeah. No, I, it was just like my whole body was just incredibly achy. I had no energy whatsoever. Like, you know, I was obviously very depressed. My anxiety was through the roof. And it sucked. Like, it really, and like, I remember like I remember feeling like that, but trying to convince myself that I was okay and that I could just carry on with life. Like everything was normal, and just being like, nah, you felt worse before, you've been sick before, and you've done. And then like 10 minutes later, you're just like, oh God, everything is awful. And like, you know, just not being able to eat and throwing up and oh God, like just.
I slept in my bathroom at my grandmother's house. Like, grabbed a blanket and a pillow. I was in the bathtub. I was sleeping. If I got hot, I would like throw the blanket off and get completely naked and throw
hot, cold.
Like, yeah. I would throw the pillow out and I'd turn on the cold shower. And then if I got too cold, I would like turn that off. And then I'd throw the blanket back on top of me, soaking wet. And then I'd puke.
It's miserable.
It is the worst experience. Like, I hate. Like, I.
Like, I'd rather be hungover, honestly. Like, you know.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, that is a terrible feeling, being hungover. But, like.
Yeah.
At least it goes away, like,
At least it goes away in a few hours. Like, you can just. You know that, like, but like, detoxing, you like, I don't know. It's different, man. It's just like, there's this sense of hopelessness that comes with detoxing that you're just like, you know, in the back of your head, like, I know it can make this go away. I know it can make this go away. I know it can make, and you just like, that just, I don't know, for me, like that was just going on in a loop in the back of my head. Like, I know what I can do to make this go away. I know what I can do to make this go away. You know, like, I just kept repeating that to myself. But it was like, and that's honestly, that's why I had to go to Tucker's, because I knew at Tucker's they were going to lock me in a room.
Yeah.
And there was no hope of getting what I needed to get. You know, there was no hope of it. And, but at the same time, I was ready to stop using. I just couldn't do it by myself, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's the same thing with me too. Is like, I had made a lot of plans to cut back on certain drugs like fentanyl and switch back to heroin or just use pills or switch or just drop the opiates and just do benzos and, you know, but, and I was taking methadone and I was like, well, I could just do methadone and benzos and all that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, what am I doing for real? Like,
yeah.
You know? And what really I needed was like, I just broke down and I asked for help. Like I asked someone that's, you know, that's in recovery. And, thank you, Ryan. He just got me a bed here at McShin and I, you know, luckily I really, really, you know, I'm grateful that I did go to Tucker's. Cause if I would have stayed here and detoxed, I probably would have got arrested or something, you know, cause I was not thinking right. I was crazy. Like I was gone.
Yeah.
And, detoxing honestly is like that. That's what keeps a lot of people from wanting to get clean.
Get clean. Yeah.
It really is a big thing. Cause you don't want to go through that. And, but the thing is there is resources and stuff and there is places like here that, you know, really can get you to the right spot so you can deal with it.
I mean, and that's the thing, like, so for a very long time, I was not for MAT, Suboxone and methadone and all that shit. Cause I was just like, you're not clean. You're just replacing one thing with another thing. And like, but I had that old school mentality, you know, I was just, I'm not, you know, old school at all. I just had that mentality of like, if you're going to be clean, that means you're going to be clean. That means, you know, no mood or mind altering substances, period, you know. But as I've, I guess like you could say, progressed in my recovery, it's just like, okay, first off, that's hypocritical as shit because I drink caffeine. That is definitely mood altering. Mm-hmm. You know, I take pre-workout powder. That is mood altering. You know, like I take, if you think eating food is mood altering, you
nicotine.
Yeah. Nicotine. Like so much of the things that are ingrained in our daily lives are mood or mind altering, not necessarily mind altering, but definitely mood altering.
Yeah.
Like, but the thing is like, that's if, when it comes to MAT, like exactly what you said, Art, like I MAT exists for a reason.
Yeah.
You know?
It helps. 100%.
If it helps, yeah. If it takes that fear of, I don't want to get clean because I don't want to have to detox. Like if it takes that fear and I'm not going to say nullifies it, but like takes it down a few notches to where it's bearable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for it, you know, like do what you got to do, you know, like if taking subs is what makes you stop using all the, you know, using street drugs all the time and that type thing, like do what you have to do, you know, like it doesn't make you any less clean than anyone else, you know?
Yeah.
No, I do think there's a difference between, you know, I think if you're going to use subs and you really want to get clean, you should taper off of them.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be
a long term.
No, that's exactly what I mean, I'll come out and say right now, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I was the person to be looking for fentanyl. I use fentanyl, straight fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for the press pills that, you know, press pills, like, cause I knew they had fentanyl in them.
Yeah.
And, when I went to Tucker's, they got me off of that stuff and put me on Suboxone and made it more manageable.
Yeah.
I wasn't so afraid. It was really the benzos detox. That's what really got me. But, you know, I just knowing that you can do it a little easier because you know how miserable it is. It does make it easier. It does. And, if I'm not out using, smoking fentanyl or shooting fentanyl and I'm just taking my Suboxone as prescribed and I am tapering down, I just went to Dr. Breslin's today and I'm down to 1 milligram from 6.
Hell yeah.
And,
congratulations.
And, yeah. Thanks. And I do plan on getting off, but so far so good, man. Like I, you know, got 100 days today. Mm-hmm. And
hell yeah, nice, dude. Yeah.
So it's, you know, this is the best I've done in recovery.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm taking it as prescribed and I am tapering down. I'm doing it for the right reasons. I'm not out there running around using drugs that will kill me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm off the benzos. I'm off the meth. I'm, you know, not drinking. It used to be a really sticky subject for me, being in AA or, you know, and NA, but mostly I've done AA in California. And, I've had sponsors tell me that I'm not clean taking Prozac, like, you know, and that's taken me out before. And what I've come to realize, you know, after 14 years of trying, of coming in and out of the rooms is really like, if I'm doing the right thing and I'm taking the medication for what it's for and I'm, you know, that's me. That's, you know, I don't know. I feel okay with it and I know what I'm doing and I'm doing much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
You know,
you can't let the way other people perceive things ruin how you perceive things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I don't mean to sound insensitive, but to hell with what other people think, man.
For real.
I mean, seriously, like it's all about your mind. Like if you're obviously doing far better.
Way better. Yeah.
Than you basically ever have.
Yeah.
And whatever you need to maintain that is what you need to keep doing. Cause it's nobody else's life. It's your life.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
If you're satisfied with it, if you feel like you're in a good place, then that's it. That's all you need. That's what you need, you know? Like for me personally, like, so I take a couple of medications. I take Buspar for anxiety. And then I take, amitriptyline for, antidepressant, but it's also like it's supposed to help with like nerve pain because I get migraines real bad. And my doctor prescribed me a low dose to take at night because not only does it help me sleep, but it's supposed to like be like a preventative for my migraines.
Okay.
But then I also take a specific migraine medicine that honestly makes me feel kind of crappy when I have to take it. It gets rid of the headaches, but it makes me feel kind of crappy. But like I'm on all these different medications and like, you know, on top of like ibuprofen when I need it and like, you know, over the counter painkillers and stuff like that. But like there's people out there that, you know, would say that I'm not necessarily clean because I take those types of medications, you know? And I'm like, dude, like, first off, it's not like I can take those meds and they're going to like get me high. They're not get high medications, you know? Yeah. And like, if a doctor tells me I need something, like if I go to the doctor and say, I have really, like when I first started doing this podcast, I had I had such anxiety. I'd sweat, you know, I would get hot. My face would get flush. I would start to shake a little bit. I would have to bring a change of clothes because I would sweat through the clothes that I was, it was bad. So I had to go to the doctor and I was like, hey man, anxiety, don't want to take benzos, you know, but if there's something that can, you know, so he put me on the Buspar. Okay, cool. I still take it. Do I need to take it? I'm not 100% sure, but I talked to my doctor and he was like, don't stop taking it. If you want to stop taking it, we can work on a plan for you to stop taking it, but don't just stop taking it, you know? And I trust my doctor, you know, I mean, we're not like the best of friends, but like God knows I'm in recovery. I told him, you know, stop prescribing me the Adderall, stop prescribing me the, you know, the Ritalin and all that stuff. Like, I'm not taking that stuff anymore. Like I'm really trying to live a clean and sober life. you know, blah, 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 blah. And he respects that, you know.
Yeah.
He thinks I need the, he had put me on Vyvanse. And he still thinks I need the Vyvanse. But, you know, he knows that I don't want to take anything like that. I don't take anything amphetamine-based, you know. And so he doesn't push it on me, you know, but like.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but like. Yeah.
I mean, one thing I would say about that is for me, that like, I know I'm in good hands. I like Dr. Breslin's an addiction treatment specialist. Addiction treatment specialist. And he knows like what's a no-go, like no benzos, like, you know, and we did a taper with that too. They tapered me at Tucker's and then I did a taper with him. And now I'm completely off. I haven't taken any benzos in like 2 months.
Nice.
And that's huge because I had been taking benzos for 24, so like 10 years.
Yeah.
And it was a lot. And, you know, to be off of that and be feeling not so anxious, you know, I get anxious here and there, but like, not like before. It was crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Like I couldn't talk to people without taking a few bars yeah. So that's the one thing I would say about that is like, you know, for me, I have to go to a doctor that knows about addiction or knows that I am in recovery and has my best interest, you know, in mind. And, that's important, really, you know, to be honest with the doctor.
Yeah, yeah. It's very important. Yeah. A lot of people are, I don't know. There's this thing in the back of my head that says, like, if I get hurt, if I break a bone or something, do I want to go in and be honest with the doctor or just want, do I just want to let them like, oh, free lapse, you know?
Yeah.
Like, also Patrick,
Pat Jones, who thanks, is,
thanks. I may be old, but I can bench press way more than you. So,
yeah. Pat, I'm coming for your title. I want to look like a country dad too.
A country dad?
Yeah. I want to look like that dad that may or may not be from the deep south. Yeah, Pat, I'm coming after you. I'm taking your title. But I wanted to say something on that tip about, you know, medicines. Like, I have to tell myself all the time, like, walk a mile on my co-occurring disorders, right? And, like, we are so widely accepting co-occurring disorders in our community.
Y'all keep talking. I have to change my battery out real quick.
Go ahead. We are so widely accepted in our, in our community with co-occurring disorders, but there's still the stigma about us taking medicine and stuff like that. Like, I cannot physically manage, like, you know, I cannot physically manage my bipolar disorder without my medicine. Like, that is a reality that I've had to come to terms with, because I know what happens when I get off my bipolar meds. I get really irritable. I become an asshole. You know, I'm either up here or I'm way down here. I have often described it to my grandmother.
You become an asshole?
Yeah. Just. I am an asshole. I still am. But I've often like described my bipolar disorder to my grandmother as like, have you ever been so happy that you wanted to kill yourself? Like, shit. No, straight up.
Shoot. I don't mean to laugh, but like
that's something. Damn. That's something that's happened to me. Like, I got to a point where I was so freaking happy that I was like, this is the happiest I'll ever be. I will never experience anything greater than this. My life will amount to nothing greater than this. Let's die right now.
Yeah, that's real, and that's serious.
And that's what happens when I get off my meds. Like, you can't tell me I'm not clean because I'm taking these meds. I'm clean because I got off of those drugs that were truly harming me. I have not smoked crack in 6 months. I've not shot dope in 6 months. I have not snorted a pressed pill in 6 months. I am clean. I have these disorders that are telling me, or that mess with my brain, saying you are not good enough. You know, I'm majorly depressed. I have to take medicine for my depression. I have terrible anxiety. I got to take medicine for that because I know when I don't take it, I get the shakes, man.
Yeah, dual diagnosis is not a uncommon thing with addicts. And then especially once you stop using drugs, all that stuff comes out. And it's important to watch it and take care of it. And, you know, yeah. So just be aware of that.
All right, host Darian.
We're
at the 54-minute mark.
We are.
Time flies when you're, you know, having fun.
Having fun. Great conversation.
I think it went okay.
Yeah, you did great. Art was nervous.
I know, but he doesn't need to be. Like, everybody's nervous when they first come on. And you've been on before. Like, it's not even your first time.
Yeah. He was like, it took me so much convincing to get him to do the podcast with me.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, come on, just do it. He was like, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to help set up.
You don't ask. You just say, hey, you're doing the no, I know what I'm going to do from now on. Hey, you want to help me set up the podcast? And then just say, hey, sit over there. Yeah. And then just go live. And
yeah. By the way, we're live.
And you're the guest. So have fun.
Welcome this Saturday.
All right. So what does McShin have going on? There's no events this weekend, are there?
No.
Yeah, there's no events this weekend. There's a lot of events coming. There's the golf tournament coming up.
May,
isn't it?
I want to say the 22nd.
That's what I was going to say. The 22nd. I think it is the 22nd.
I think so. The White Marker Project.
But next week on the show, the 19th, it will be Testify Tuesday.
Holy.
With Elder Walter Randall, MDIV. Walter's awesome, though. I love that guy.
Can I start calling myself Darian PRS?
No.
PRC? Peer Recovery Coach?
No.
Why not? I've earned those titles. I'm getting business cards that say that regardless.
Anyways. So we got Testify Tuesday on the 19th. And then on the 21st, we have Miss Amy Burke Denellen. She is the community outreach manager at Brightview. She was just in here, actually. But yeah, that should be a good show. I'm not exactly sure what Brightview does or what they are. I believe they're like some type of health organization.
Is that the nice lady that was here yesterday?
Yeah.
Same
one. Yeah. She seems super nice.
I'd like to get a shout out to Zoe Freedom Center, because those are the people that got me connected with McShin. Like to get Dana Brown on this show. Dana Brown is like, she's a PRS.
Okay.
She's super cool. I think she would do
great on the show. If you want to book somebody, we can talk about that off the air. Okay. Off the air. But yeah, I mean, we got a couple good shows coming up.
I love doing the podcast.
Country Dad.
Yeah, there we go. Who is Pat Jones?
All right. So we're going to go ahead and land the plane. And
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. Appreciate it.
Do you have any closing remarks, Art?
Just want to say what's up to my son, Noah. What's up, buddy? Miss you. Love you. That's it.
Do you have any closing remarks, Justin?
I think I just said all of them.
All right. Well, my last thing is, I like to leave at house meetings. I like to leave everybody with a quote, and I got one that's been sticking with me recently. Mahatma Gandhi says that the biggest mistake you can make in life is fearing that you will make another one. And that's all I got. Thank you for letting me host this podcast. And we'll see you next time. Pew, pew, pew.
Honesty Liller. I am the CEO of the McShin Foundation and a woman in long-term recovery. Since May 27, 2007, I have not used drugs or alcohol. Woo-hoo! Thank you so much to the Richmond Times-Dispatch and all of our voters for getting the Herd podcast. Those podcasts are amazing. Not only has it helped thousands upon thousands of people in their recovery, as well as family members, but it has helped me in my personal recovery. I get to listen to them now in my car through Spotify and iHeartRadio. And it's just really, really important for us to be innovative in the addiction field and the recovery community. So when COVID hit, we had to be innovative. You know, we really had to think of like, what can we do to reach people that cannot go to 12-step meetings, smart recovery, faith-based, whatever, that we're shutting down constantly. So we were innovative here at McShin. Let's start podcast. So with Todd, John, Alex, and some other staff, you know, we all just kind of jumped in who can do what. And with Todd's lead and John's lead, the podcasts have been amazing and we're still doing them today. So I want to thank you for all of your votes and all of your energy and all of your support of our mission of healing families and saving lives. Thanks.